everybody, and welcome. Happy Monday to everyone. March 7th for the 11th episode of the ABXY cast. Joining me today from the far, far away land of Texas is Chase.
Yes, sir.
And
yeehaw,
as always,
I should say.
Yeehaw from the great state of Texas. Or no, is it really?
It's not really that great.
It's just big. The big state of Texas.
The big state. That's the only thing good about it.
The big state of Texas. And as always, I am Tyler. That is my name. I don't introduce myself anymore, I realized.
No, you don't.
I've listened to the start of the last two episodes and just like, this is Chase. I guess everybody should know who I am. Yes. if I sound like I'm in a good mood today, it's because I saw Batman last night.
Ooh.
And it was very, very good.
Was it?
Yeah, it's very, very good. It's 3 hours long.
Better than The Dark Knight?
I have to go see it again to be sure.
I don't know if anything could top The Dark Knight. That movie
really close. If it doesn't quite top it, it comes really close. It's better in a lot of ways. But yeah, I need to go watch it again. Give it a rewatch. It's very long. Yep. It's 3 hours long. So it's not a short movie by any stretch.
Long movies are the best movies. Let's be honest.
They are.
Especially when the pacing is done correctly.
It's
a great movie.
And the pacing in this movie was pretty damn good. It's beautifully shot. Like, it is gorgeous. And Robert Pattinson is a great Batman. Great Batman. But Paul Dano as Riddler, holy shit.
Great.
Talk about a terrifying villain. Oh my God. Fantastic. Yeah, like to take the Riddler of all villains and make them like legitimately terrifying is kudos to Matt Reeves on that one.
Does he speak in riddles the whole time?
Not really. There's some riddles. There's riddles. Obviously, it's part of the Riddler character. But he doesn't speak exclusively in riddles.
That would be very funny if every dialogue just rhymes.
Every dialogue is just a rhyming riddle and you have to guess what the answer is. There's some good ones. There's a couple riddles that are like, oh yeah, I know the answer to that. And then there's a couple other riddles that are a little more obtuse and take a little thought. So Batman solves them before you get a chance to.
Oh.
But a really good movie. I'm very surprised. Everybody gives their A game. It's very good. Very good.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's currently my favorite movie of the year.
Well, what movies have come out this year? Wait, hold up. Hold up. Did Spider-Man come out this year?
December of last year.
Okay, I was about to say.
Yeah, no. December of last year. I think this is the first movie I've gone to the theater this year to see.
Well, that is why it's your favorite movie.
So, exactly. I'm trying to go see Uncharted next because I really got to see... Like, the movie is getting decent reviews and it's making a decent amount of money. So I got to go see it. But.
Tom Holland, though.
Yes. Tom Holland. Miscast as Nathan Drake, but it's okay.
That's okay. It's okay. We still love Tom Holland.
Yes, we do love Tom Holland. So you've been out of town this week.
I have.
You only had a little bit of time to play video games before you left. So did you play anything fun?
I did. So last time we spoke, I said I was going to change the way my gaming style was. And I did. So I started looking at... I feel like jumping into a brand new game, trying to get all the achievements, it's a little difficult. So I was like, we're playing Dying Light. Let me just try to achievement grind Dying Light. Well... Mutual friends of mine want to play it with me, and schedule issues and me going out of town, we just couldn't find time. So I noticed I was already like 60% on 7 Days to Die. Like, you know what? Let me just start a server, start grinding some achievements. And let me tell you, Tyler, those achievements are stupid hard to get. So I was like, I'm pretty good at this game. It's just a survival game. It's not hard. Yeah. It's like Minecraft meets zombies. Super, super, super easy.
Well, Minecraft already met zombies. There's zombies.
Yes, but more like a zombie apocalypse.
I mean, it's very assumptive of you to assume that Minecraft isn't a zombie apocalypse.
Minecraft is not.
It kind of feels like one.
No, it is the start of a world.
You got tiny little villages of people that have like a primitive language because they've been set back. You have all these monsters that roam the world at night.
No.
You have no technology. You start with nothing. Tell me, it doesn't sound like it sounds like a zombie apocalypse. Like post-post-apocalypse.
Post-post, like everybody off the world and it's just like one man.
No, because you have villagers and stuff, but like
Steve the Conqueror.
It's after the initial fall of civilization when everybody kind of reverts back to the primal hunter-gatherer society.
And you're just the lone superhuman that somehow turns redstone out of the ground into a computer.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, no. 7 days to die.
Yes, 7 days to die. Some of the achievements, one of them, for example, is to get 250 player kills. I mean, if
that's a lot
in the scheme of things, it's just time consuming. But since it's a dead game, how am I going to get 250 player kills? I had to ask one of my friends to hop on so I can just keep killing them over and over and over and over. And I end up getting up till 60. And then we both just said, no, I can't do this. Not to mention you have to die 500 times.
Well, that seems easy.
Seems easy. Except
just monotonous.
Yes. But the zombies only want to stay in the house, basically. And fall damage in the game, it's kind of like the same thing with Minecraft blocks. Except I built up like 40 blocks and jumped off, and I didn't even lose half my health. So I can't find an easy way to kill myself. Kill 500 zombies in one life. That is tedious. Very, very, very tedious.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I don't think I'll get is survive 1,200 minutes in one life. Not to mention every 7 days there's a horde.
And the 1,250 minutes, is that like real world time?
That is real world time.
Holy shit.
That is real world time.
That's 20 hours.
That's 20 hours I have to survive. A day in 7 days to die is about 1 hour and 20 minutes. And every 7 days is a crazy large horde that lasts all through the night. So not only do I have to survive 20 hours, but I have to go through two hordes. So I can't just AFK. I need food to live. So I got to play the game. I might throw in the towel on this one. I might. I'm going to give it a shot. I'll talk about it next episode because I did make the effort to make a server. So I will try. But, you know.
This is why I hate, like, achievement hunting in general, like going out and doing it, is because you have games like this that have, like, stupid achievements that. Yes. Nobody is going to accidentally get this achievement. Nobody, like, you have to tell people what this achievement is so that they can specifically go get it. And I hate multiplayer, any achievements that are tied to multiplayer. Like,
yes,
other than like,
like
the basic play a multiplayer match. Like, that kind of stuff is fine. But any sort of multiplayer achievement sucks because if the multiplayer ever gets shut off, those achievements are completely unobtainable now.
Yep.
Or if a game doesn't have a huge population, like getting 250 player kills, you said you basically have to get somebody that's willing to stay with you while you kill them 250 kill them. Times.
Yes.
So you can get your digital little badge.
There's a way I bypass this. So I asked a mutual friend. I was like, hey, can I just kill you over and over? I end up killing him 10 times. And then we kind of realized that this is tedious.
Yeah.
So we came up with a great idea to get a third mutual friend to hop on. And instead of me killing both of them over and over, we just made a little pit and we just took our fists and we just kept beating each other to death. So at least we were having fun. I was getting my deaths and I was getting my kills.
You made a little arena.
Yeah, made a little arena, and by the time I got the 60, we were just bored.
Yeah.
So we said we would try to spice it up and do something else, but...
So now what you do is you create a server that's just called Fight Club.
Yes. I could just make a Fight Club server, but the game is dead.
And then you go on the 7 Days to Die Reddit, where people are still like somewhat interested, and you say, hey, I've started up the Fight Club. Come join my Fight Club server. And then just you have a bunch of people that are joining. You'll have to create like multiple pits, though.
Yeah.
So that you can have multiple games going. And then just have like, is there some sort of resource you can bet on fights?
No.
I was going to say, shit, if there was a way to bet resources on fights.
There is a currency. So, but it's.
Can you trade it?
You can. It's just easy to obtain. So you have to bet large amounts. And I also don't want to. All right.
You bet Bitcoin.
Oh. My no, no, no,
not like a full Bitcoin, but like hundreds or thousands of a Bitcoin so that it's affordable.
100,000ths.
No. Like 10,000th of a Bitcoin is still like $3. Here,
you know what? You may like this one. I'll just bet like a quarter of an NFT.
That's not how NFTs work.
I know.
Bet a quarter of an NFT.
I'll take a pixel out of it. Because they're only like 64-bit, so I'll just take a pixel.
You just bet so you, you take you have your pic you have your picture, and then you break it down and you mint each individual pixel as an NFT on the blockchain, and that way you can bet with partial NFTs.
And let people try to collect them.
Try to scam the scam there.
Try to scam the scammer, and then, well, on top of all these achievements that I've named, there's 3 secret achievements.
Oh. Fun.
Yes. One of them, not too bad. You just have to pillar up to the top of the world. Not bad. That's easy. Mm-hmm. The second one, you have to find, keep in mind that since it's post-apocalyptic, it's kind of difficult to find weapons. And you have to somehow find a revolver. And you have to get lucky enough to find a certain type of zombies that are dressed as punks and kill 44 of them with the 44 revolver.
Yeah.
That's one that's almost unattainable. Yeah. And then the last one is you have to be completely wet and completely cold. So it's easy. You just, when you mix in the factor that you can't die on that 1200 minute life, then it makes it a little bit more difficult because you can't do that achievement until you get that one.
Yeah, you have to do it before you start
Or after you die. But
oh my goodness.
I will give it a shot. Next episode, I may talk about which ones I've gotten. And if I get close, I may just do the final push and finish it, but I don't know.
We'll see. One of these days you'll play a real game.
One of these days I'll play a real game.
One of these days, Tarkov, Minecraft, and now 7 Days to Die.
One of these days. Well, you know what game I'm playing next? I'm playing Blood Bowl.
Oh. So, I guess that's another achievement huntable game.
Yes, and I think Blood Bowl 3 got confirmed, so that's another reason I kind of want to play through
it.
Yeah. But that will be my next achievement one.
Well, fun. Not fun. I have been playing a lot this week, but also not a lot. I say that I've been playing a lot, but it's mainly been like multiple games, but tiny amounts of time.
Right.
So the Kirby and the Forgotten Land demo dropped on Switch. It's the first 3 levels of the game. There's 2 difficulty options per level. So I played all 3 levels twice at both difficulty options. It took me about an hour to go through it. And that game, it's not quite Kirby meets Super Mario Odyssey. It's kind of more Kirby meets Super Mario 3D World with hints of Super Mario Odyssey in there. But it's really good. It's really good.
It looks good.
It's super simple to play. It's not super challenging. The levels aren't super long. Like, I played the first 3 levels 6 times, like each level twice. for 6 levels, and it literally took me maybe like 45 minutes to play all of that. So it's not super difficult. It's not super time consuming. So it's the perfect kind of game for a handheld system like the Switch. Mm-hmm. A game you can just pick up, knock out a level or two, and then put back down. Obviously it's not out, so I don't know what a lot of the progression mechanics look like as far as like you collect coins and you collect stars, and you know, like, what does that look like for what can you do with that stuff? I'm assuming it ties into the town building aspect that they teased in the trailer. So I'm assuming that's where that comes in. But the actual gameplay, it's stupid simple, and it's Kirby. So you're just sucking on fools, taking their powers. taking their powers, and then whacking them with their own powers. And then the mouthful mode where you, like, Kirby eats a car.
I know, you know, that seems so cute though.
And then drives around said car. When I did it, it took everything in me not to do it, but as soon as Kirby ate that car, my brain immediately, you wouldn't steal a car from those old like anti-movie piracy ads. It's like, you wouldn't steal a car, and it's like, well, no, I wouldn't steal a car, but it's not going to stop me from downloading fucking Talladega Nights on BitTorrent.
You know what it reminds me of when Kirby eats that car in that trailer? It reminds me of, I don't know if you're familiar with the meme, the Thanos car.
No, I'm not.
It's a purple truck, but the bumper looks like Thanos' chin. But I thought of Kirby car. Car, Kirby car, same thing.
Yeah, no, Kirby eats a lot of things in that game. He eats cars, he eats cones, he eats vending machines.
Water.
Yeah, so when he eats the vending machine, you can spit out cans at enemies to break things. And then when you eat the cone, you basically just pile drive shit. And it's really fun. It's really fun. And it was a very enjoyable little bit of time, a break from my two other games that I've been playing. I've been hopping between Horizon Forbidden West and Breath of the Wild. So Breath of the Wild is a game. I have owned that game since I bought a Switch. I played that game, and that game frustrates me a little bit. Like, there's elements of that game that I just hate. Weapon durability is one of them. It is ridiculous. Not that it exists. I have no problem with games that have weapon durability in them, that you have to repair your weapons, or even that your weapons break and you lose them. I don't have a problem with it. Dying Light has that. The Demon Souls has it. Like, a lot of
Minecraft
games have
has it.
Minecraft has it. Weapon durability is not something that I have a problem with. What I have a problem with in Breath of the Wild is the fact that every weapon feels like it's made of paper. Ooh. Just varying degrees of sharp paper, because the weapons do different amounts of damage, and some weapons do more damage than others. But a lot of the weapons you get in the early game, basically, like, you can kill two enemies with it and then it breaks. And so a lot of fights are me, like, you know, taking out range dudes with my bow and then whacking on some fools with my, you know, Bobokin club. And then it breaks after two guys. But thankfully, I killed these two guys so I can pick up their spear and whack them. The game doesn't always give you clear direction on how to approach certain situations. So, like, on the Great Plateau, where you start the game, you have to go to the four different shrines and complete the trials in order to get the glider to get off the plateau. Two of those, shrines require you to go through a freezing cold hellscape. And I was constantly dying because I didn't have any way to protect myself from the cold.
Right.
And the game gives you like subtle hints on how to create stuff, but it never pops up and is like, you know, like it's just some random dialogue that you read about how to basically make some spicy fucking steak or whatever that gives you a bonus to a buff to freeze resistance, basically.
You kind of have to figure it out on your own.
You have to figure it out on your own. Now, I've noticed that as I've been playing more, a lot of that stuff is explained in dialogue with characters and NPCs and stuff. But there's no system in the game for like remembering that. So like, I'm not going to remember all these recipes. That's just way too much for me to remember in my head. So I basically just resorted to Googling, how do I create something that will help me get through this situation?
Wiki page, how do I get through this? Just follow it step by step.
Basically, like, I'm not looking up walkthroughs on where to go to find things, because the game does a decent job of saying, like, oh, you need to go to this area, and some, like, your main quests, they get marked on the map, like, where you need to go to speak to NPCs, and then the NPCs kind of then tell you, like, oh, well, you need to go to this general area. And then you can kind of head that way, place a marker on your map, and go. So it's the side quests that are a little more vague, and then just the finding, you know, resources. Like when you, if you need to get somewhere that requires you to go through the cold, you either need to find gear that gives you a resistance to cold, or you need to craft food that gives you a resistance to cold, or find a potion that gives you a resistance to cold. But it's not always clear, unless you have memorized everything, how to do that. Now, you can take pictures of things and fill out your Hyrule Compendium. So I don't know if maybe if you take pictures of a food dish, if it'll give you the recipe for that food dish, and then you can go find it later. So I'm still kind of figuring my way around that. But yeah.
It's not very direct, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's kind of a game that I kind of go in there and I tell myself, okay, I'm going to do like a couple of quests and I'm going to explore a little bit. But I don't really have a firm goal in mind. And I think if you play it that way, and it's a lot more fun than if you try to go in with like, I have 45 minutes and I need to complete as much as possible. Mm. You definitely especially have to have patience.
If you leave off, you're going to forget some of the recipes, right?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't keep track of it for you? You just have to remember them?
Not that I have seen.
Oh, my. That is vague.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to work my way around the menus to see if there's a place where, like, because you have the option, if you have food in your inventory, you can click on it and view the recipe for that food. But I don't know if there's a way to save that in your, like, thing. Because the way you craft food in that game is you go to a fire and you basically like a that has a cook pot on it, and you basically throw your ingredients into the pot. Like you actually go into your inventory and select drop, and it drops it into the pot. And so there's not a like menu that you go and craft in like a lot of other games. It's a lot of in-world stuff. So, but yeah, like I think that it's a game that frustrates me a little bit, but I'm also really enjoying it a lot. And I definitely think that for me, the biggest roadblock was always getting off the goddamn plateau, because the game starts you there and you basically, you can't leave it until you complete all the stuff on it. It's kind of like a tutorial zone.
Tutorial island.
Tutorial plateau. And then once you get out of Tutorial Plateau and the world opens up, you can go anywhere and do anything, which is fun. It's definitely in the vein of like a Skyrim, which is just you do whatever you want now, but a little more unforgiving, which is weird for a Nintendo game that it's as unforgiving as it is. And then I've been playing Horizon.
Ooh, actually, every single episode you say, oh, I've played 1 hour. I've played 30 minutes. How much have you played this week? 2 days?
5 hours. About 5 hours. I just got to the embassy in the Daunt. So I'm still in the Daunt. But I got to the embassy. So I'm not super far into the game. But I've played enough of that game now to know that I like this game, like, significantly more than the first one. The gameplay is a lot more refined. It's just such a good game. There are some issues with the game. Like I mentioned the first time I brought it up last week, that there's some shimmering in the 60 FPS mode. So I've been playing it at 30. It looks fantastic. There's some issues. Some, like I said, screen space effects. I've started to notice some pop in at distance, not as bad as it was in the first game. That really only manifested when I finally got my first mount and was going on my way with my little machine horse. But yeah, so, and then like in dialogue cutscenes, there's some issues with like shadows popping in. There was one particular cutscene I was in where it was Aloy and some dude talking, and it kept cutting between the camera looking at Aloy, and behind her was like a mountain face, and then cutting and looking at the other dude, and behind him was a forest. And every time it would cut to him, it would just be black behind him, and then the forest would pop in.
So just small little bugs.
Small little bugs, little issues here and there. They did just release a patch that shut Aloy up a little bit. She talks way too much in that game. That is one issue I have with it. To the point where like you'll be in the middle of trying to solve like an environmental puzzle, and you've just got there, you've just entered this room, you're trying to figure it out, and she will give you the answer. Like she will tell you, "Hey, go do this." And I'm like, "You need to shut up." And I'm almost at the point of turning the volume on dialogue down and then just making a mental note anytime I'm about to talk to an NPC to turn the dialogue up. Because I'm so sick and tired of hearing her talk.
She spoils her own game.
So they did release a patch that cuts down on how much she speaks. But there's still some other stuff that needs to be addressed in that response, in that area. Right. She's a bitch. I will say that, like earlier when I was playing, this character started talking, which he's a pretentious character. Don't get me wrong, but he started talking, and before he could even finish his first sentence, Aloy just looked at him and went, "Shut up." She has zero patience with these people, and it's a level of sarcasm that I can truly,
you can get behind.
But yeah, no, I really like it. The 30 FPS mode, I notice it. It's not as smooth as I would like. It definitely looks worse. So I was playing it last week. I was playing it on my dad's TV because I was dog sitting. And this week I've been playing it on my OLED TV. And it looked smoother on his TV than it does on mine, which is just because my TV is better with the OLED. So it looks a little choppier. But the 60 FPS mode feels great. It just looks bad.
Oh,
it's really blurry, really noisy, really shimmery.
Is it like blurry when you move or blurry just standing?
When you're standing still, it's not as bad because of the techniques they use to like get it to a higher resolution. But once you start moving, it just falls apart.
Ugh.
But I like the it's just, there's a lot of improvements here though. Like the side quests are way more interesting and in depth. And I've had several side quests that, you know, like you have side quests now that feel like they're a part of a chain of quests rather than just like you do a side quest, you run here, you do this, and then you come back, turn it in, get your reward. You have like, you do this part of the side quest and then you turn it in and then you go to another side quest, and that quest is now like referencing things you did in that side quest that you just finished. And it's kind of a continual story. And then I got a side quest that I can't even start yet. Like I literally picked it up and it pops up that you can't do this quest until after this particular thing occurs.
So why give it to you?
Well, I guess because like you're in that area and you've completed all the prerequisites, so it goes ahead and lets you have the quest, and then it just says you can't continue this quest until after this main story beat. And then once you hit that main story beat, you can do the quest. Which I think it's just a matter of, it's an early game thing of some of the quests you get take you out into the rest of the game, and I'm still in kind of that starting non-tutorial zone, but starting zone.
Yeah.
So there's like the main story event to exit and go out into the rest of the world. I have to do that before I can do the quest. So it's just kind of like throwing it up and saying, hey, don't bother working on this quest yet, 'cause you have to do this first. And there's a lot of changes to gameplay. The fast travel system has been completely reworked. So now you can fast travel between, campfires and known settlements without having to use fast travel packs, which was something in the first game. You had this consumable resource that you had to use to fast travel.
They just didn't allow it. Like, you literally had to go hunt down fast travel packs.
No, like you could craft them and you could buy them off of merchants, but you had to have them in order to fast travel.
Please tell not me that you would craft.
Not that you would want to do that. They're very easy to craft. Okay. Yeah. And they're very cheap to buy. I think you just need like some metal shards, some wood, and some meat from an animal, I think is all you need, to make it. It's very easy to make. You wouldn't want to fast travel in the first game anyway, unless you were trying to go all the way across the map because the loading times were so long in the first game. Now the loading times are super quick. Like the longest I waited, I think, was like 10 seconds to fast travel from one point to another. Although it does seem to me that fast travel is like the loading time is not affected by distance. So it's not longer the further you are away, because that super long fast travel time that I got, super long in quotes, that was like 10 to 15 seconds. I was fast traveling from like one spot to a village that was like maybe a 5 minute walk away, like tops. Right. And I mean, like, walk. Had I gotten on my mount and gone, it probably would have been closer to, like, 90 seconds. So it wasn't super far away. And then, like, I did a travel earlier from the top of a mountain to literally right next to it, but at the bottom of the mountain, because I didn't want to have to walk all the way back down. And that took, like, 3 seconds. So it's pretty quick. Fast travel packs, yeah, very quick loading times. Getting in and out is super fast. The fast travel packs are still in the game. So what they allow you to do is you can fast travel to known settlements and campfires from anywhere. So if you're not near a campfire and you don't want to run to a campfire and you just want to fast travel from where you are, you still have fast travel packs. You can still craft them. You can still buy them for that purpose. But otherwise, you just fast travel between those known points, which is free. It doesn't cost you any resources, which is super nice.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Yeah, and then upgrading weapons and armor has been approved. So in the original game, like, you had a bunch of different weapons and like bows and trip casters and all these things that you could pick up, and then they had slots on them that you could add coils to, or weaves if it was a piece of wearable gear that would improve its stats or give you extra bonuses and resistances. That's still in this game. But now you have a workbench you go to, and you basically have to upgrade the weapons and the gear. And so you upgrade them to give you bonuses to their like base stats. And then you upgrade them to give them like an extra bonus that boosts maybe your concentration or whatever, or more bonuses to their base stats. And then you upgrade them to unlock those slots that you can put in the coils or the weaves. For even more bonuses and buffs. And those are swappable now, which in the original game, you couldn't take them out once you put them in, or you couldn't, there was restrictions on it. Now they're hot swappable. So if you have a fight coming up where you're going to be fighting an enemy that's weak to that spits fire, for example, you can swap out your, you can put fire resist on your gear, and then when you get done with that fight, you can swap it back to your stealth bonus or whatever. But yeah, no, I like I'm really enjoying it. It has a lot of improvements to the first game. It's a very, very big game. There's a lot of shit to do in that game. And I think it might falter a little bit if the story doesn't hold up, or the exploration doesn't hold up. But right now I'm having a really good time with that
game. That's good. I mean, it sounds like you're having more fun than I am with 7 Days to Die.
Yeah, well, I'm not going in there trying to achievement hunt.
I guess.
Yeah, I'm just going into play. And when I'm sitting down and playing something, it's fun to just sit down and play something. But
well, maybe I should give that a shot.
Maybe you should just find a game to play. Like, I'm not saying stop achievement hunting, but find a game to play when you're not achievement hunting that you're actually enjoying and having a good time playing. And realistically, find a single player game that you can play by yourself. Like,
well, you caught me at a bad time because right before we started this podcast, I actually just finished Red Dead 2.
Yeah.
So I went through that whole story. It was a great story too. So maybe I should find another game like that.
I mean, if you're trying to find a game that is going to be on par with the storytelling that Rockstar does, good luck.
Yeah, that storytelling was outstanding.
Yeah, but that, I mean, there's lots of good single player games out there to play. Lots of good ones. Okay, because we've got games coming out this month that we'll be playing.
Yeah.
Tiny Tina's Wonderlands comes out.
That will, day one, I will be playing that.
It comes out at the end of March. I'm super excited for that. They released a 20 minute gameplay trailer of it, and it looks good. The people playing it were terrible, but it looks good. Looks like more Borderlands, which is always fun. Always fun. But yeah, so that's what we've been playing.
Yeah, not much.
So now we can transition into the news.
The news.
And kind of like last week, not a lot happened because, you know, there's real world shit going on.
Yep.
Still, as shitty as that is. But we do have news related to that because not the entire gaming industry, but a good chunk of the gaming industry has stood up and said, fuck Putin with the rest of us.
Right.
So EA has stopped stopped sales in Russia. They're removing Russian teams from FIFA 22 and NHL 22. Microsoft has stopped selling hardware and software in Russia, as well as new services. So if you're not already subscribed to like Xbox Live and stuff, you won't be able to subscribe to it. Ukraine has called on video game companies like Sony and Nintendo and Microsoft to cut off completely online services in Russia, which I think they should do. It sucks for Russian gamers. Like, sorry, but you know, if it's something that'll cut through the propaganda that they're being fed so they can see, you know, maybe get a taste of what, like, well, why am I not able to play games? What's the reason I can't play games? Oh, like, maybe that'll help. I don't know. But, maybe. So you got all that going on. Very heartening to see that.
Yeah.
And then GSC Game World, which is the studio that's making Stalker 2, they're based out of Kyiv in Ukraine. They released a brief video a couple days ago, basically emphasizing just how much danger they were in Ukraine, what's going on. And basically they said that before this all happened, the most common question they were getting was gameplay when? When are we going to see gameplay? When are we going to see gameplay for Stalker 2? And now it's shifted to, are you guys okay? And that's why they released this video. Right now, they have paused development on Stalker 2. Obviously, that seems like an obvious thing, so that they can help their employees and families survive. And
stay safe.
Yes. And stay safe.
In a video game.
Yes, this is more important than that. But they did say that after they win, they will go back to making the game. And you gotta give it to the Ukrainian people. Those people are full of gusto. Yes,
they very much are.
They've got stones. It's been really heartening to see those people stand up to this, but it's just, oh man.
Yeah.
Whew. It's been a rough time with all that going on.
It has.
So hopefully Sony and PlayStation will follow suit. I haven't seen anything in the last couple of days about that. Hopefully Nintendo will follow suit. You know, just kind of, I don't want to say stick it to them, but stick it to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, make them feel the pain that they're inflicting on one country. I mean, they're just inflicting it on these innocent people and attacking apartment buildings and schools and hospitals, shooting at nuclear power plants. Kind of seems like, you know, they've accepted they may not be able to have a military victory, so they're just going to demolish the whole place, which is just disgusting.
It is disgusting.
It's disgusting. But so hopefully more and more companies will pile on and start cutting off Russia from these, from buying their products, buying their games, participating in online gaming, just further and further isolate them until they, you know, send them into the corner until they realize what they've done. And then maybe when they come out
and keep them in the corner. No, keep them there.
Keep them in the corner.
Just keep them there. I mean, not to make a joke out of the scheme of things, because I know it's very serious, but sadly, since EA stopped currency sales in Russia, there's no Ultimate Team in Russia.
Yep.
That, at least there's, that's one positive thing, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Is this what it takes to get rid of Ultimate Team?
Just war. No Ultimate Team if war.
No Ultimate Team if war. But it shows that at least with these companies, they are putting their principles over their profits.
I like that it shows it's bigger than gaming, you know?
Yeah. I'm
not a big fan of EA, but I like that they did that.
Yeah. And some of it is sanctions, like they kind of have to, you know, with the sanctions, but you know, a lot of these companies have like regional subsidiaries so that they can kind of avoid paying taxes on money they make in Russia. So they can, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're still stopping sales in Russia, if they have a Russian like incorporated EA that could have continued to do it, like this is a big deal. Still. Yeah. Moving out of that into some other stuff that's been going on. Pokemon is back.
Yes. Again
for the second time this year.
Yes.
And they announced Gen 9, the new games, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which will be coming out later this year. The new starters are adorable.
I know.
They are adorable.
So cute. They are so much better than the last set of starters, I think.
Yeah, they are super adorable. The grass type kitten.
Is that who you're getting?
That or I fuck with that duck.
Yeah, so you have the grass type kitten, the fire type alligator, and the water type duck.
Yeah, with a fun hat. Don't forget the
hat. With a fun hat.
The duck has a fun hat. He kind of, you know what? He kind of looks like a soldier duck.
So, like, throughout all of Pokemon games, I have almost picked the water types.
Eddie
but
Duck.
That grass kitten. Ooh.
Yeah.
He is so cute.
It's so cute. Oh, my God. They're just so adorable.
I hope they don't do anything like Incineroar, to where it starts off as a little kitten, and then it turns into what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Hopefully, I mean, a lot of the like stage one Pokemon are really cute though, and then they like evolve into these Lovecraftian horrors, and you're just like, oh my god, I don't want you anymore.
I know. It's like, no, you are cute stage one.
Yeah.
Now what are you? You're walking on two legs. What?
What is this? What kind of horror nightmare fuel have you turned into? So the trailer came out. There was a lot of just little pictures of city areas and pastures with tons of Pokemon. And the trailer description says that it is an open world game. So it looks like they're taking the traditional kind of cities and towns of regular Pokemon games and mashing it with the open world of Arceus, and that is going to be your new Pokemon game.
Yeah, I feel like their test run was with Sword and Shield, but that little open area, you know?
Yes.
And then they made Arceus, and I like it. I really enjoy the open world aspect.
Yeah. I mean, this game already looks better than Arceus from like a visuals perspective. You know, they actually have grass in the game.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. It's still a Pokemon game on the Nintendo Switch, so it looks old as far as like it's not top of the line visuals.
Yeah, but I mean, still that's okay.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I'm very excited about this. But they announced a bunch of stuff at their little Pokemon Presents thing. Alolan Pokemon are coming to Pokemon Go. Pokemon Legends is getting an update. And you get some Ultra Balls and Jet Balls for free. And then they're creating a online anime series that's coming out later this year that's set in the Hisu region of Legends Arceus.
Ooh.
And then the names of the starters. So you have Sprigatito. That's your grass cat.
Aww.
Fuecoco, which is the fire croc. Fuecoco. Oh. And then Quaxley, the duck.
Quaxley.
Which, looking at Quaxley, he looks like a Quaxley.
He does look like a Quaxley.
He looks like a Quaxley. I like Fuecoco. I like the name Fuecoco. It rolls off the tongue really well. I like it. But that kitten, man. Ah,
kitten. That kitten is cute.
But I, as I said, like Quaxley looks like he's wearing some sort of like French military beret. Like he looks like a soldier duck.
A cute soldier duck.
A cute little soldier duck. And I kind of hope that his final evolution's got like an eye patch and a mustache, and he's just like a PTSD, like a cigar in his mouth. He's got PTSD. He's got like a naval officer's, like a naval captain's hat. Just like full on.
Just full on military.
Yeah. Quaxley. Full on. Like it's just cute little petty officer Quaxley, and then you know he moves up to like you know Commander Quaxley, and then it just turns into like Nazi Quaxley.
No, just, you gotta go with Nom Quaxley.
Nom Quaxley.
Nom Quaxley. The PTSD and everything.
Four-star general, fucking chief of staff.
The trees are moving, Quaxley.
oh my goodness.
Very excited, though. Very excited.
I see dead people, Quaxley.
Man, watch his third evolution be cute, and we're just roasting it.
Oh my god. As long as the third evolutions aren't horrifying, like monstrosities, that would be awful.
I feel like you spend most of your time with a third evolution anyway.
Yeah, you usually do. Like you get there, and that's like you spend most of your time with the third evolution Pokemon, which is why it sucks that the starters are always so cute.
I know.
It's like
grow up.
I'm gonna get Quaxley or Fuecoco or Sprigatito, and I'm going to then get another Pokemon that I'm actually going to use just so I can keep this little baby Pokemon around with me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to find stuffed versions of those three starters for sure.
I am 100% getting a stuffed version of this kitten. That thing is cute.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. We might be able to buy them on Amazon. You know?
Oh, here's the plug.
That's the plug. You might be able to buy your stuffed Pokemon starters on Amazon, who just launched a game streaming service officially in the United States, Amazon Luna, which is their game streaming Amazon service. Amazon Quaxly. It was announced in the fall of 2020. It went into an invite-only early access program. I've had access to it for a while. You could only really play it on mobile through the browser, on desktop through the browser, or if you had a Fire TV, which I have a in my go bag, in my backpack that I take when I have to go spend the night somewhere. I have a Fire TV in there, that I little stick that I bring with me, so I can just plug it into the TV and watch my shit without having to log everything in. So I've been able to play stuff on this service, mainly on my phone. It's fine. It's fine. It's like all streaming services. They're fine. I don't like them, but they're fine. It's not
great.
Nothing beats playing a game locally.
Yeah.
Like playing a game on your computer or on your console or on your Switch or on your Steam Deck or on your phone that's locally on your phone, they just don't feel as good. It's not that they're unplayable. You know, at Christmas, my sister's boyfriend played Assassin's Creed Origins on Stadia for like 4 hours. And minus a few like network issues because the kids were downloading, you know, software updates and games on their brand new Xboxes, you know, there was no issue with the stream and he had no problem playing it. But for me, like, it's just like everything feels mushy and looks blurry and just no thank you.
Vaseline-y.
Not quite. It's all 4K. It just doesn't look as crisp as playing 4K on my TV on my PlayStation.
I see.
But as part of going live, they're adding some new channels. They're adding a retro channel, which will have some, you know, classic games on it. That'll be $4.99 a month. They're adding Jackbox games as a channel. So, you know, you'll be able to play all 8 Jackbox Party Pack games on the service. And that's also $4.99 a month. They're debuting a new Luna Couch feature that basically lets other friends join you in playing, even if they don't have Luna. I don't know if that's locally or if that can be remote, but that's a new feature that they're doing. Those join the Luna Plus channel, which is basically the basic channel that you have access to when you subscribe to the service. That's $5.99 a month right now. It's going to go up to $9.99 a month. But if you subscribe now, you lock in that $5.99 price for as long as you stay subscribed.
Ooh.
The family channel, which just has family games, that's $2.99 a month. Ubisoft Plus channel, $17.99 a month, but that gets you Ubisoft Plus on Luna, on Stadia, on GeForce Now, and on your PC. And then they added a free Prime Gaming channel if you're a Prime member that basically will have a new selection of free games each month that you can play. And then a Twitch integration, so you can connect your Twitch account and stream directly to Twitch on Luna so that you, you know, can play live for other people.
Kind of like how Xbox used to have it. With their Twitch?
Yes, but kind of more similar to Stadia and it's streaming directly to YouTube, which is that basically the game's rendering on their server and then they're sending one stream to Twitch and then one stream to you. So you're seeing the stream, and then instead of it coming from your end to Twitch, it's coming straight from Amazon to Twitch. So you don't have to worry about your internet bandwidth or the quality of your game streams being impacted.
That's actually kind of nice, though.
Yeah. The biggest difference between Luna and Stadia is that and GeForce Now is basically their market model. So Stadia is you buy the games. It's kind of like a console in the cloud. You buy games, they add to your library, you can play them. And there's a $10 a month subscription that gets you 4K HDR and then some rotating games in your library, kind of like PlayStation Plus.
Right.
And then GeForce Now is a subscription service that you pay X amount of money a month to be able to log in and stream, but the game library is your existing PC game library. So as long as the game is supported on their service and you already own it on Steam or Origin or Epic or whatever, you can play it on GeForce Now. So GeForce Now makes a lot more sense if you're an existing PC gamer.
Right.
Because you're basically paying for a powerful PC in the cloud so you can keep playing your games. Amazon Luna is a subscription service it's not the games you already own, but you also can't buy games either. So it's kind of more like Netflix or Xbox cloud gaming. It's just games they offer. The biggest difference between Luna and say Xbox cloud gaming is the entire or most of the Game Pass library. This is a smaller selection of games, but then to add games to that library, you have to subscribe to different channels. So like you have the Luna Plus channel, which is the base offering. And then if you want retro games, you have to pay more money a month for those. Jackbox, more money a month for those. Family games, more money a month for those. So it's a lot more that like
is ass.
Yeah. It's a horrible pricing model.
Yes.
It's awful. I don't understand why they went with ass. That.
The only thing good that I've heard is the Twitch. That's it.
So like the base subscription offers a decent amount of games like that Luna Plus channel. It offers a decent amount of games. And if you're already a Ubisoft Plus member, it's $3 extra a month to add support for this. So if you're already paying $15 a month, for Ubisoft Plus, it's only $3 more. And then you connect your Ubisoft account to get access to being able to play those games on Amazon Luna and your saves and stuff sync between Luna and this. So it's only a little bit extra to get access to that channel. And then the Prime stuff is free. So if you just subscribe to Luna for the $5.99 a month, and then you add your Ubisoft Plus, you pay the extra $3 a month for that on your subscription you're already paying, that's $8.99. Plus you get the free games every month that you can play. It's not quite as expensive as it sounds when you start figuring, oh, well, I'm paying $5 a month for this and $5 a month for this. If you're adding channels all the time, then it's going to add up. And if you're not already a Ubisoft Plus member, like I wouldn't suggest somebody pay $18 a month for Ubisoft Plus if they're only able to play the games on Amazon Luna or Stadia. I don't think it's worth it at that price. But if you're thinking about
already paying,
if you're already paying for it on your PC, $15 a month because you want to be able to play those games, then $3 extra a month doesn't sound too bad if then you can justify it by saying, okay, well, now I can take that game and play it on Luna or on Stadia. And on Stadia, it's only like 3 or 4 games that sync saves. On Luna, it's all of them. You know, so Luna makes more sense. But Stadia has better image quality. So it's trade-offs after trade-offs.
Right.
But then you have GeForce Now, which you can pay a flat fee for, and you can access all of your Ubisoft games as part of that. I don't think the Ubisoft Plus streaming restriction applies there. So I think you might be able to get away with paying the $15 a month plan and then paying for GeForce Now and playing there.
Nice.
Game streaming is a mess.
Yeah, it sounds like a mess.
It is a mess, and I just don't know if it's worth it.
I don't think it's worth it. Personally, I don't think so.
Like, there's an element of like, oh yeah, I'd love to be able to play my games on the go, anywhere, you know, and be able to pick up and continue playing my games. But that's kind of what the Steam Deck will solve for me. Like, in my particular instance, that's what Steam Deck would solve for me, is being able to take my PC games, or the vast majority of my PC games, on the go. Right. And then I could use Xbox Cloud Streaming and GeForce Now if I wanted to pay for it to kind of fill in the holes. But and then maybe Stadia, since it's free, if there's a game that I want, you know, that has like cross progression and I'm willing to pay for it again, you know, maybe do it that way. But yeah, this sucks.
It's
a mess.
It's a mess.
A whole mess.
It is a mess.
Speaking of the Steam Deck, though, Valve boss Gabe Newell has floated the possibility that they're willing to bring Game Pass to Steam. The idea here is that they are talking to Microsoft about essentially allowing consumers to subscribe to Xbox Game Pass through Steam, like you can subscribe to EA Play through Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to access all of your Xbox Game Pass games inside of Steam instead of having to use the Xbox app. This would allow for people that want to play those games on their Steam Deck to be able to play them on the Steam Deck and play them on PC. I don't think this will happen. As awesome as it would be, I don't think it will happen.
Why not?
Microsoft would not want to give up that 30%.
Oh, it's 30%. Yeah.
So, I mean, not to say they couldn't come to a special arrangement with Valve, to where Valve was like, we'll take 10 or 15%. But Microsoft's not going to want to give up that any percent of that subscription revenue. And you think about it beyond that, like, not only are they giving up a percentage of their revenue, but they're also directly funding a company that is trying to make Linux a viable alternative to Windows for gaming. Windows being another Microsoft product. DirectX, which is the core graphics API that powers the majority of modern games, doesn't work on Linux. Vulkan, an open source alternative to DirectX, does. And so if Valve is successful in getting the Steam Deck to be popular, getting gaming on Linux to be popular, well, all of a sudden, you're going to have a lot more developer interest in Vulkan, in Linux, in that area, and that's going to eliminate some of Microsoft's hold on the PC gaming space that they have kind of indirectly garnered over the years just by Windows being the dominant force that it is.
Yeah.
So I don't think Microsoft is going to want to assist that in any way. But hopefully,
I mean, it would be cool.
It would be very, very cool. Like, even if it was just like, oh, okay, pay $5 a month and we'll give you our first party games. Like, it's only Microsoft Studios games. It's not all the extra stuff.
It would be fine.
And like, for me, I would actually consider paying $5 a month, if I had a Steam Deck, paying $5 a month for that separate Xbox Game Pass, like Lite, specifically so that I could download those games on my Steam Deck and play them. Because I can play them on my PC through the traditional Game Pass, and then I get all those extra games as well. But then I can also pay this little bit extra and get them on my Steam Deck. So I would be open to that if that was an option. But again, I just don't think they'll do it.
It does make the Steam Deck from like a toilet device to like a tub device.
A tub device. You know what I
mean? like you use it a little longer, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You spend a little bit more time on it.
Just a little bit.
But the Steam Deck is getting some good traction. It's getting some good traction. It came out. The reviews have been pretty solid. Initial reactions have been pretty solid.
A lot of games. You were dogging on it like two episodes ago.
Yeah, a lot of games work. I wasn't really dogging on it. I was just I didn't see where it fit in for me. You know, but the more that I've thought about it, like the more I can see where it fits in, because I was on my Switch when I was going to play Breath of the Wild and I was looking at a bunch of games that are on there, and there are a bunch of games that in theory, some of them I probably do own on PC just through Humble Bundles and things. And then some of them I may not own on PC, but they're games that I might want to get on PC to play when I'm home, like Stardew Valley, for example. But they're games I specifically bought on Switch because I wanted to be able to play them at home and on the go. So the Steam Deck still kind of in my head, it's like, I don't see where this fits in for me in like personally, but for some people, right, it seems to be a really great device. I think for people that like me that have a large, extensive game library on PC, but don't want to, and want to be able to take that everywhere with them, the Steam Deck makes sense. But, right,
and I agree.
I have a Switch that does that too. It's just not all. It's just not the games that I'm playing on PC. It's a different library of games. But it's not like I have unlimited time when I'm traveling anyway. So do I really want to bring the games I'm playing from home with me, or can I suffer for a couple of days and just play some different games? That's kind of my mindset on it. But
yeah, and I agree with you, especially with like all the great games Nintendo has to offer. I mean, yeah, if you're always away from home, then yes, the Steam Deck is a viable option.
Exactly.
But if you're going on a plane, you have to choose between, you know, Steam Deck, Switch. Two complete different game libraries.
Exactly.
And I mean, I actually don't mind changing it up when I go on a trip. I normally bring my Switch. I actually brought it here with me to Texas.
Yeah. It's absolutely something like, you know, I would be down to bring a Steam Deck with me in addition to my Switch, and that way I had more options. But like, am I going to rush out and buy one? No. Am I probably going to eventually end up with one? Probably. I'll probably get one eventually. Just so, you know, just for like journalistic purposes for this podcast, like being able, right, to comment on it and do deep dives on that as it evolves. But I do think long term, like, if the Steam Deck is super successful, it could have a lot of impacts on the PC gaming business. You know, you could see, okay, well, we're developing games for Windows and we're using DirectX, and then players are playing it on the Steam Deck and they're not getting the best experience because it has to run through this compatibility layer. But if we just switch to using Vulkan instead of DirectX, well, all of a sudden we can get almost equivalent performance on Linux without doing any other work, like not even making a native version of the game. And, you know, what does that look like long term if developers start to say, okay, well, I want to target PC and Steam Deck, you know, so we're going to start using Vulkan instead of DirectX. And that's why I think that ultimately Microsoft isn't going to play ball beyond like saying, well, if our games will work on it if you buy them on Steam, but we're not actively doing work to make them work.
Right.
Because I think at the end of the day, they see SteamOS and Linux as a gaming platform as an existential threat to their business model. But I could be wrong, because they are transitioning into this subscription-based mindset, and maybe they see, well, that's more people who can subscribe to our Game Pass subscription. You know,
I mean, it. How much are they asking? They're asking 30%, or that's well, just
that's,
a number.
That's Valve's typical cut of their on their platform is 30%.
30%.
Yeah, it works out. Valve has said in the past that it works out to like 15% overall because you know when you release a game on Steam, Valve lets you generate codes for yourself, like uh-huh. that you can sell on other stores. So you can like go to Humble Bundle, the Humble Store, and sell a game on the Humble Store for whatever, you know, the same amount you sell it on Steam, and then they get a Steam code that they redeem on Steam, and Valve gets 0% of that transaction.
Right.
And then Valve gets 30% of the codes that are sold directly on Steam. So Valve has come out and said, well, actually, it's more like 15% of revenues are what we take, but 30% is just the fee we charge for our own service. But they provide a lot. They provide a lot of stuff for developers. But that's their cut.
Yeah.
So that's probably what they would ask. Yeah. That's yeah. probably what they would ask.
That's a lot of money.
It is. It is a lot of money, which is why I don't think that's going to happen. I think that if Valve were to come and say, listen, we'll let you put Game Pass on Steam and we won't ask you for any cut because this is a win-win. You get all of the money. You get all of the money from the subscription. People buy Steam decks. People download your games through Steam. And then they buy games on Steam. You know, plus they might buy your games on Steam. So you still get your cut of those as well for the people that don't subscribe. So there's nothing to lose in that particular argument. But I don't know if Valve's going to want to do that because then if they're taking 30% of EA's money every month, then EA is going to be like, okay, well, why are you charging me 30% and you're charging Microsoft zero?
Yeah.
So I could see them being like 15% and then Valve could just be like, it's fucking Microsoft. Like,
they what would do have you to, do? They'd have to talk out a lot of things for that.
Yeah. But they are talking, which is what matters. So maybe we'll see something come of that. Not EA. Microsoft likes to talk big Game Pass like service announcements around E3, which is in a couple of months. So, I mean, E3 is not happening in a couple of months, but that time frame, of like the month of June, that's typically when this stuff kind of comes out. So maybe, fingers crossed, Game Pass will come to Steam because I would gladly download all my games through Steam instead of that trash Xbox app.
I would gladly agree with you. I absolutely hate opening that app.
That the Xbox app is garbage.
It is garbo.
It is garbage. I can never tell if it pops up and says a game needs an update. I can never tell if the game is updating or if the update was successful. Like downloads. It's a horrible app. I'm not even going to get started. It's a horrible app.
No, I agree with you.
Awful.
Yeah, you'd think it's awful.
You'd think they could make it better, but alas, no, they cannot.
No, they're too lazy.
Exactly. That's it. They're too lazy. It's slow on top of that. Just gross.
Horrible.
Speaking of the Steam Deck, though, and Microsoft wanting to get involved with them, former Microsoft studio Bungie, who is now a PlayStation studio, has rejected. Yes, it is owned by Sony.
Is that deal official?
Yeah, no, that was official when it was announced.
Okay, just making sure, because I know with Activision and Microsoft, it's quote unquote official. They just have to, you know, go through all that process.
Yeah, no, Sony's was official the day they announced it.
Okay, continue. Sorry,
but Sony owned PlayStation studio Bungie has flat out rejected Linux and the Steam Deck, and threatened to ban players who try to play the game on their Steam Decks or on Linux. And basically, so This is on their help page for Destiny 2. There's a section titled Steam Deck and Destiny 2, and this is what it says. Destiny 2 is not supported for play on the Steam Deck or any system utilizing Steam Play's Proton unless Windows is installed and running. Players who attempt to launch Destiny 2 on the Steam Deck through SteamOS or Proton will be unable to enter the game and will be returned to their game library after a short time. Players who attempt to bypass Destiny 2 incompatibility will be met with a game ban.
Oh, dang.
So, yeah.
He's going to straight ban them?
Yeah, they're just going to ban them. So, obviously, the reason that Destiny 2 doesn't run on the Steam Deck has nothing to do with the fact that it's Linux. It's their anti-cheat. You know, their anti-cheat's not supported. So if you try to get around it, you're bypassing the anti-cheat. That's why they're banning people that do that.
Right.
Why they are refusing to support it is unknown. So, yeah. Supposedly Valve and AMD are supposed to be releasing Windows drivers for the Steam Deck in the next few weeks. And so, you know, then the videos will come out comparing performance in SteamOS versus Windows. And maybe the Steam Deck is a better device if you install Windows on it and play games on Windows. Maybe it's better if you use the Steam UI and the SteamOS backend. But we'll find out soon enough. But for now, at least, there is no way to play Destiny 2 locally on your Steam Deck.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Sucks for Destiny 2 players. Yeah, it sucks to suck.
Especially if you're going to buy it just to play. Because I know Destiny 2 has a big cult following.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine buying one just to play it on the go, and then they say you can't?
Yeah. It's awful. What's crazy is Bungie already did the work to port Destiny 2 to Linux, because Google Stadia, which has a version of Destiny on it, runs on Linux. So they already did the work. And it's not inconceivable that the version of Destiny 2 that runs on Google Stadia is just the PC version compiled to run on Linux with the graphics menu stripped out. And so it begs the question of, well, can't you just port that version back to the PC and add the graphics menu back in and let it run on the Steam Deck? I don't see why you couldn't do that. You know, and BattleEye, which is the anti-cheat software that they use, supports Proton and supports Linux. So there's no reason that won't work.
Right.
And literally, enabling Steam Deck support for BattleEye in your game is as easy as sending an email. According to Valve, all you have to do is send an email to BattleEye and enable it. So this is a very hostile position for Bungie. And it begs the question, did Sony make this call? I doubt it, because God of War, Death Stranding, Horizon Zero Dawn are running on the Steam Deck just fine. No problems.
It's a Bungie choice.
So I think there's a lot of people that are trying to scapegoat Sony, but this sounds like a Bungie decision.
Yeah.
This sounds like a Bungie decision. No question. Like, yeah.
Which I wonder why.
I really don't get it. I mean,
I feel like maybe you would want your game to be played, especially if somebody could just pick it up anywhere and play it. It's more available. I feel like you would want that.
It is the perfect kind of game for that too. Like to jump in and just run around and do your dailies or whatever you need to do in that game.
Yes.
Like it's the perfect kind of game for this device. and it's the flat out refusal to support it.
It's weird.
And the answer appears to be that we only run on Windows. And I would be curious. I know that it would result in a ban, but I would like to see that game running on a Steam Deck in SteamOS, not when Windows support rolls out and people install Windows on it.
Yeah.
I want to see how that game performs on the Steam Deck out of the box, because if it performs well enough without them having to do any work other than send an email to BattleEye to enable support for the anti-cheat, then that would be even worse.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody fired it up, was like, yeah, no, the game runs at like high settings at 720p or 800p at 60 FPS, you know, and looks fine and runs fine, that would be... be like, well, then what the fuck?
That would be funny. It's like, what? Yeah, then why are you not allowing it?
The game works, but you're just not allowing it to run there. And
for no reason.
Epic kind of made the same call, though, because Epic makes Easy Anti-Cheat, which is an anti-cheat that a lot of games use.
Yeah.
And they updated Easy Anti-Cheat to support Linux and to support Proton and to support the Steam Deck. They updated their own anti-cheat to work and then came out and said that we are not going to bring Fortnite support to the Steam Deck.
It just keeps getting better and better.
And what's funny is basically he did a series of tweets. This was way back at the beginning of February. He was asked if Fortnite would be compatible with Easy Anti-Cheat and Proton. And basically he said, Fortnite, no. And there's a big effort underway to maximize compatibility for Easy Anti-Cheat with Steam Deck. He was asked why not, and basically he said, we don't have confidence that we'd be able to combat cheating at scale under a wide array of kernel configurations, including custom ones. Basically what he's saying is that Linux has a bunch of different kernel configurations, and that enabling Fortnite to run on Linux, even with Easy Anti-Cheat, the size of Fortnite, it would be impossible, is what he's saying. To which somebody said, newsflash, CE doesn't trust his own product. And in the most own goal I've ever seen, CEO of Epic Tim Sweeney said, with regard to anti-cheat on the Linux platform, supporting custom kernels and the threat model to a game of Fortnite size, yes, that's exactly right. I do not trust my own product.
Maybe these companies just don't like the Steam Deck.
Well, no, it's comes down to... Linux is a very open platform, and unfortunately for game developers and anti-cheat development in particular, an open platform like Linux, where you and I can be running the same version of Linux. So you and I could both download, you know, Arch Linux or Ubuntu or whatever today and install it on your laptop, install it on my desktop, whatever.
Right.
And then you just choose to update the operating system whenever you get a notification that says there's an update. But me, I decide, fuck it, I'm going to install the latest Linux kernel myself. So I go into the command line and I type in a bunch of stuff in the terminal and I update my kernel to a newer version of Linux than you. Even though we're both running Ubuntu, it looks the same when we look at it. The underlying guts of mine are completely different. You know, right. there's updates. So the fact that there's no, like, when you and I are running Windows, it's the same version of Windows. And the only thing that's different is my computer might be slightly more up to date than yours because I updated my computer recently and you didn't. Or I'm running Windows 11 and you're running Windows 10, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it's basically the same Windows underneath. So I get where he's coming from. But at the same time, maybe that's something Valve needs to work on. Maybe they need to be like, SteamOS is its own thing. And you can target SteamOS without necessarily having to target the rest of Linux. And maybe that will solve that issue.
Right.
But I don't claim to know anything because I've tried Linux a couple times in the past and I always butted heads against it. Always. You don't
like it? What makes it so bad?
It's not bad. My biggest problem with Linux, and this has changed a lot in recent years, but it's still a problem, is there's a lot of stuff in Linux that you have to go to the terminal to do. And it's basic stuff. Or there will be basic system stuff that on Windows, you can open a program to do it. Or you can do it right in the File Explorer. And it's fast and easy. You go on Linux, some of that stuff is fast and easy, just as it is on Windows. But then some of that stuff is fast and easy in the terminal. And because Linux is a much more developer-centric operating system, a lot of developers use it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, well, I already know how to use the terminal, so I'm just going to use the terminal. And nobody has developed like really good applications to let non-terminal wizards use that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so on Windows, if I want to update my applications, I open up Steam, I open up whatever, I run the updates. That's it. On Linux, I can do that as well, but it is faster for me to just hit super T, open up the terminal, and type sudo apt-get update. Or sudo apt-update.
So it's like a console that you have to type in?
Yeah. You don't have to. There's an app I can open and run updates that way. But it is 10,000 times faster for me to just open up the terminal, type in, you know, sudo apt updates, ampersand upgrade, and it'll automatically update everything and install all the latest updates. And, you know, if I need to, it'll tell me to reboot and I'll reboot, but usually you don't have to. So it's much faster, but that's the case for every task, that it's faster to do it that way. But then in the Linux world, that sometimes means that while it is faster to maybe copy a file from one directory to another in the terminal, sometimes they just don't think to put that functionality in the rest of their software. Yeah. Because you just go to the terminal. Just go to the terminal.
Yeah.
And some Linux users have this real elitist attitude of, well, you don't want to learn the terminal? Then go use Windows. Or go use Mac. Don't even bother. And it's like, if you want Linux to be a mainstream operating system, people with zero knowledge of how to use a computer are going to have to be able to use it.
Especially a lot of older people don't even know how to use Windows. And Windows is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a reason that my grandpa, he's, you know, in his late 70s, early 80s, he's old. And he's getting up there. He's, you know, got, as he's gotten older, his vision's degraded, everything. So, we were trying to figure out ways for him to be able to go on Facebook and check his email and all that stuff that would be easier. And we thought an iPad is perfect. It's very easy to use. He doesn't have to worry about it. That man can't do it. But his Windows computer, he knows how to use it top to bottom, left, right. You know, he knows how to use Windows. You know. So, like, and then me, I jump around between 10 billion operating systems. I have a laptop with Chrome OS. I have my Mac Mini with Mac. I have my Windows PC. I have my iPhone. I have, you know, all this stuff. So I'm adaptable. But even right. I load up Linux and I'm just like, ugh, God, this is frustrating. I highly recommend anybody who's on the fence or interested in learning about transitioning to Linux from Windows to go watch the Linus Tech Tips Linux Challenge videos, where in the very first episode, Linus installed Pop OS, which is a version of Linux based on Ubuntu that was made by some company that makes their own Linux computers. So it was kind of like we make the operating system, we make the hardware, whatever. But you can download it and install it on any computer. And he installed it and he went to install Steam in the App Store and Steam wouldn't install. Like, he literally clicked it and it popped up and said there was an error and it couldn't do it. So he went to the command line, like he was constantly told to do if there was an issue. He went to the command line, ran the install script for Steam. It had like a bunch of text pop up. And then at the bottom, it's just like, you know, type that you understand that you're doing this, which he, you know, someone who's not super familiar with Linux, he did what he said, enter, completely uninstalled his desktop environment.
Oh.
So he just had a blank console screen when he turned his computer back on.
Oh.
Which he could have then reinstalled it from, you know, because it still had an internet connection, all that stuff. He could have gone in and reinstalled the desktop environment, but nobody should be able to nuke their desktop environment while installing an app.
Yes.
That just shouldn't be possible. And yet on Linux, it was. And it was a bug that they found and fixed, but it took that video coming out for them to know that it was a thing. So, yeah.
That is, oof.
So I hope Valve can fix Linux as a gaming platform, but I think fixing Linux as a gaming platform is locking it down as much as possible.
Yeah.
So that it's not this wild, wild west. And I think that then defeats the purpose of Linux, which is that it is this open operating system that's, you know, you can do whatever you want with.
Has the user freedom.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's all about user freedom. And so, you know, maybe Valve can get there, but I do hope that Bungie comes around on Destiny 2 support, and I hope that eventually Microsoft brings Game Pass to Linux in some way and brings it to the Steam Deck in some way. And I don't want the answer to be, oh, well, you can just do Xbox Cloud Gaming. I don't want that to be the answer.
Boo!
Because Xbox Game Pass has changed the way I buy games, but if I'm a Steam Deck owner, all of a sudden there's a huge incentive to buy Halo and Forza and Gears and all of those games in Steam instead of subscribing to Game Pass, because I can play them on my PC and I can take them on the go with me. Versus if you're a Game Pass subscriber and you have to download it through the Xbox app, you can't take it with you. You can only play it on your PC. So all of a sudden, or on your Xbox if you're a Game Pass Ultimate sub, but like you may not have an Xbox because you have a PC. What's the point in having one, right?
I agree.
You know, and yeah, I could go buy a Series S for the same price as a Steam Deck and then just bring that with me, but it's bulkier and I have to plug it into a TV and or a screen of some kind and power. Versus the Steam Deck works on batteries and it has its own screen and speakers and everything built in. But that's a market segment that I think if that market segment grows large enough, Microsoft will kind of be in a position of like, okay, well, these are people who are going to opt to buy our games rather than subscribe, which they still make money off of that. Because they don't want to, they want to be able to play them on the go. So we need to figure out a way to get our subscription over here as well. So it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game.
Yeah. That's all it is. It's a greedy game is what it is. That's all that is.
Yeah.
It's not a numbers. It's just greedy.
Exactly.
Pass me some dough.
Basically. It's all spreadsheets, man. It's all spreadsheets.
I'd love to be a part of that spreadsheet.
Man, I would love to be a part of that spreadsheet too.
Yes.
Speaking of Game Pass, though, new games are coming to Game Pass. So available now, you have, as you're listening to this on March 7th, Far Changing Tides is coming to cloud, console, and PC on day one.
All right.
Microsoft Flight Simulator is coming to Xbox Cloud Gaming. And Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 is coming to console and PC. And then later this week, just in time for my birthday on Thursday, I'm so excited.
Several games. Birthday.
Yes, thanks. Several games are coming to Xbox Game Pass. Oh, excuse me. Kentucky Route Zero is coming to cloud, console, and PC. Lawn Mowing Simulator is arriving on Xbox One. Talked about that
year.
Talked about that a couple weeks ago. It is finally showing up.
End of the year.
Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy is coming to cloud, console, and PC. And Young Souls is coming on day one on cloud, console, and PC on Thursday, March 10th. As part of this, there's also the new Sentinel update for No Man's Sky and Xbox. The Xbox app on PC, since we were talking about that earlier, is getting some updates. You can now choose what folder your games get installed to in addition to what drive. You will now have access to files for select games you've installed, as well as the option to repair and move your games. And you will now be able to mod even more games. You won't have to reinstall existing games. You just right-click them and in the left-hand side of your app and click on Manage and then Enable. And you can also move and repair your games from here. And so that update should be rolling out or has already rolled out. And then just a couple games are leaving Game Pass on March 15th. Nier Automata, Fogs, Torchlight 3, and The Surge 2 are all leaving on the 15th. But I'm excited for Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy because I've been wanting to play that.
Yes, yes. I've actually had a friend play the Far game. A mutual friend of ours, he said it's actually a very chill, relaxing game.
It definitely seems that way.
Yeah, if you want to kick back and just chill and just play a game, it's a perfect game, is what he was saying.
Yeah, and now it's on Game Pass. Included with your subscription.
With everything else.
I was going, so when they first announced Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, oh God, really? And then I saw gameplay and I was like, it looks all right. It looks all right. And then the game came out and it was getting like these super great reviews and people were calling it like the best narrative in games of 2021. Like it was getting super high praise for like just the gameplay was really solid. The game was really good and the story was fantastic. And so I was like, oh, I kind of want to play this. I really want to play this. And so I was kind of getting around to trying to figure out when I would fit it into my schedule. And then it went on sale for Christmas and I almost bought it and I didn't. And I'm kind of glad I didn't because now it's coming to the Game Pass.
Yeah.
And this, it just goes to show how much like our habits of buying games has changed.
You just can't buy whatever game you want now. It's like, should I just hold tight until it comes on Game Pass?
There is a voice in the back of your head every time you click the buy button now that's just like, it's coming to Game Pass soon. You should probably wait.
It's coming. It's coming to Game Pass. Come on, like, man.
You just got to wait. Just wait a little while and it'll be there. Just wait a little longer. Be patient. Don't be such an impatient jerk. Come on.
Just come on. Come on. It'll be there. You like Flight Simulator? It'll be there day one. Come on.
Yeah. And... oh, man. It just goes to show how much gaming has changed since I was younger, since I was a kid, even in the last few years, to go from I used to buy every single game that I wanted to play, and now it's – and I used to buy them on disc, and then I was like, oh, I'll just buy them digitally and download them, and now it's – I don't even buy games anymore.
No, I just pay monthly, and I get 300 games.
It's like what movie just came the Kingsman – or The Kingsman, rather – just came out on HBO Max and Hulu. And you can rent it on iTunes or buy it on iTunes. And I'm going to rent it on iTunes for $4 or whatever it is. Only because the movie is not available in 4K on Hulu or HBO Max. And so that's the only reason that I'm going to pay money. Because otherwise, I would just watch it on streaming.
You just want to watch it in 4K?
I just want to watch it in 4K HDR on my 4K HDR TV. Make use of all those pixels. I got 8 million pixels. I don't know what to do with them. Come on.
Way to flex.
Yeah. You got a 4K TV too. Don't.
Yeah, I know, but I don't have OLED.
Listen.
No, don't listen to me. Swap me TVs for a week. And
no,
tell me how.
Because you'll never want my TV. You'll never want to let my TV go.
Exactly.
Don't
get me wrong. 4K is nice, but your TV, that OLED,
it's so nice.
It is nice.
Context for the viewers. You know, we live in Louisiana. Last year, we got hit by a really, really bad hurricane. Just lots and lots of destruction. It was very bad. In our particular neck of the woods, there's a lot of shit that got broked, but for the most part, it was not too bad. Got a little windy, some shit fell over, but otherwise, we were fine. Right. But that fucking storm nuked my TV. Like, I had a Sony, a very nice Sony LCD TV. You know, it was not like a super expensive TV. It was like $1,000. You know, a mid-range TV. It was really nice, 55 inches. Fantastic picture quality. It looked really, really good. You had a very small percent share of ownership on that TV that you purchased with with a dime.
Was it a dime?
It was a dime that you found on my table, so I'm pretty sure it was my dime. So,
hey, but that was still part of my TV.
Yeah, so you know, you had a small ownership of the TV. It was a great TV. It was great.
It was great. That's why I gave you a dime.
And the only thing that sucked on the TV was the speakers, but we got a sound bar. You know, fixed that problem right up. And then the hurricane came, and we were watching the news, and the power flickered out and came back on. TV came back on, was working just fine. So I turned it off and I unplugged it because I was like, I ain't taking no chances. I knew the power was going to go out again. I knew it was probably going to keep doing that on and off, on and off, on and off thing. Power finally goes out. It's out for like 5 days. Finally comes back on. Go home, plug the TV in. It's not working. No picture. The light, the backlight came on. You could tell that the TV was on. And I went through the process of factory resetting the TV so that and turning the volume up, and I could hear sound. So the sound was working. I could hear me navigating the menus. I just could not see anything. So something fucking died in that TV. And then I was lucky enough to get an email that I was pre-approved for a Best Buy credit card. I think Best Buy was being predatory because I think everybody we know got a Best Buy credit card at around that same time. They were just like, oh, everybody around here is going to need some new stuff.
Hey, might as well.
Pulse it out. And me and my roommate went to Best Buy and bought an OLED TV. And I had heard the hype when buying that TV. Like, I had heard the hype that these TVs are amazing, but I was always like, they're great, but I looked at the numbers on paper and, like, they don't get super, super bright compared to, like, my dad's TV. Like, my dad's TV can get up to, like, 1400 nits, and my TV caps out at, like, 750. So his TV can get almost twice as bright as my TV can, which is great for his living room because a lot of light comes in from outside and it's a very bright room to begin with. So, you know, he needs a brighter TV to combat that. Right. So I was like, you know, yeah, we have blinds up against the door to the balcony. And, you know, it's not very bright in our room, in our living room. And the lights that we have aren't super bright. Plus we usually turn the lights off when we're watching TV anyway. So, you know, we don't need a super bright TV, and the picture on this thing in the store looks so fucking good. So fucking good.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And then I played video games on it, and I was like, holy shit. And then when I was dog sitting at my dad's the last two times that I went over there and was dog sitting for them, I had to use his TV, and there was at no point the entire time that I was there. I fiddled with that man's TV settings the entire time I was at his house both times, trying to get that TV to look right. And I just couldn't do it.
Unbelievable.
It just looked like washed out and like nothing looked natural. Like I could.
That's the biggest first world problem I've ever heard in my life.
It is. It's such a first world problem because I could, you know, the only thing I will say is that when I was playing Horizon Forbidden West in its 30 frames per second mode on his TV, it looked smoother on his TV than it does on mine because the pixel response time on OLED is basically instant. So my screen updates and there's like no motion. There's no blur between frames. Whereas on his TV, the time it takes for an LCD pixel to transition from one color to another, it takes time. So there's basically smearing that happens when when you're changing from one frame to the next, to the next, to the next. And that smearing goes down the faster the refresh rate of the TV is. So if you're playing a game at 60 or 120, it's not as noticeable. When you're playing a game at 30, you know, it can cause that smearing issue. But in a game like Horizon Zero Dawn, which has really good motion blur and everything, it looks very smooth. Whereas on my TV, it looks very clean because it's not blurred out when I'm moving the camera or anything. But that 30 frames per second is a lot more noticeable.
That is such a first world problem.
Yeah. Let me come calibrate your TV, man. I don't know. I can make it look good. I can make Please. It look good.
Please, I'd love if you can come calibrate my TV.
Yeah, one day I'll come over there and I'll calibrate your TV, make it look nice.
Fuck around with my TV. That shit don't look like an OLED.
No, I can't shit. Make it look like an OLED, but I can make it at least look really, really good.
Make it look better than it is.
Yeah. Make it look nice.
Make it look nice. I can grind my 70s to die on my TV, you know?
You can grind your 7 days to die on your TV, play your Madden.
Cast my Blood Bowl.
Yeah. Speaking of Madden, not only is Madden now in the Game Pass, but they're giving away PC codes.
Are you serious?
Of Madden on Prime for Prime Gaming. So even though I will never play it, I now am officially an owner of Madden NFL 22 on Origin.
You put it in there?
Yeah, I went ahead and got it. Yeah.
What? You're going to play me in Madden?
No, I'm not going to play you in Madden.
How bad the game is.
I ain't going to play it, but I went ahead and got it.
Come on.
I'm a game collector, even if I'm not going to play them. I'm a game collector. I am not going to install that trash on my PC. That is not happening.
I agree with you. It is trash, but you give it a chance.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for the news this week. News. And there are no listener questions this week.
Are you serious?
None. Yeah, it's a little disappointing.
How many views do we have on the last episode?
I don't know. I haven't looked. I haven't really been looking at the numbers because I'm just wanting to do this on a regular basis and get it out. But
if there is more, I'm just saying, let's just say there's 5 views. That should be 5 listener questions. That's
all I got. Not everyone is going to ask a question. Not Fine. Everyone.
If there are 6 views, then there should be 3 listener questions.
Let's see. There were 8.
We should have 4 listener questions.
So we don't have a huge audience yet. We're working there. We're working there. We're pushing.
We need some more questions.
We got to advertise. We got to start pushing it out. But yeah, no, we really like your questions. podcast@abxycast.com is the email, or you can DM abxycast on Twitter. Either way, we'll get your question and we will put it in the doc and we will answer it in next week's podcast if you send us some.
Yes, please send us some. Ask me why I'm in Texas. Ask me what color socks I'm wearing today.
You really want to be asked what color your socks are.
Well, today
we'll make an opening bit.
They are Surfer Santa socks.
Surfer Santa.
Yes, they're a summer Santa sock.
Oh my goodness. And what was it the last time? Like Bugs Bunny or something like that?
Yeah, it was Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny, yeah.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I'm not wearing any socks right now, but when I was wearing socks earlier, it was one white sock and one black sock.
Of course, you have to have your different colors.
I have my different colors. I went with basic colors, but I had two different colors.
That is, you're the first person I've ever met that does that.
Yeah. Somebody listening to this is like, he does that because he just doesn't have any clean socks. And that is not the truth. Like, I do have clean socks. Them? So sometimes I just choose it and I'm just like, you know what? I'm feeling like white and black or, what you know, blue and green today. Like,
what? For real?
Yeah. There are just some days I just, especially like when I'm wearing long pants and you can't see my socks. Those are the days that I like am even more like, it's a little surprise for
like no one will know.
Nobody will know. And when somebody does know, like when they notice, if they notice my socks, they'll be like, he's only doing that because he's wearing long pants. And nobody else is going to know, but I know. And he doesn't know that
I know.
I know his secret.
Different socks.
I know his secret socks.
I bet you he's wearing purple and yellow.
No. Right now, blue and yellow to show support for Ukraine. That's what I'm going to go buy some yellow socks. It's really hard as an adult male to like find not expensive socks that are not white or black or gray. Like, you really got to go be willing to spend some money.
You do have to hunt.
Sucks.
It's a lot of hunting.
I need somebody to create like a value colored socks brand. That's just like all it is basic colors. It's not like crazy designs or anything like that. It's just like basic colored socks and they're not super expensive.
Just normal socks.
Just normal ass socks. Like, I'm not asking for like, just send me a pack with some no shows, some ankles and some crews. Like, that's it. And actually no crews. I'm not going to wear crew socks. Those are too long.
I was about to say, all I wear is crew socks. You tweaking.
I'm not going to wear crew socks. They're too long.
You wear ankle socks all the time.
I mean, I have crew socks that I wear, but I prefer ankle socks or,
what?
No shows, depending on what shoe I'm wearing.
What? I will wear crew socks with shorts and like a pair of Vans.
No. See, I'm from the time that if you were wearing visible socks, you were a weirdo.
Nah, you tweaking.
Like, there were instances where...
It says the one who wears two different pairs of socks.
Yes, I know. Exactly. Because when you were wearing socks, if they were visible, you were already a freak. So you might as well just embrace it and wear multiple colors.
You're just hidden. You're like, nobody will know.
Nobody will know. Nobody
will know that my feet are supporting Ukraine.
Exactly. It's
no one will know.
Silent solidarity. That's what it is.
Silent.
Unless you go on my Twitter, in which case it's very loud solidarity.
You show your talks on your Twitter?
No. I'm talking like screaming about Ukraine on Twitter.
Oh, I thought you were like, hey guys, wearing my blue and yellow socks today.
You know, photo of your feet. I'm taking pictures and I have a special like list of all of my tweets about socks. Like, I'm not there.
Just daily sock update.
Yeah, daily sock update. You know, you know what? I may start doing that.
No.
Hashtag sock o'clock.
No. Hashtag sock o'clock.
Yeah. Hashtag sock o'clock. I'm going to just tweet at the same time every day a picture of my socks. It's just going to be hashtag sock o'clock.
Currently at work. Working the register. Here's my socks.
I ain't working no register. If I'm at the register, some shit has gone wrong. My day's already bad enough that looking at my socks is like the highlight.
Oh, no. That is rough.
Oh man. But yeah, no, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start doing. So follow me on Twitter at Sweeney Tyler for my sock o'clock daily sock updates.
No shot. You're going to actually do that.
They will start sometime next week so that I can get I can plan out my socks so I can make sure.
Order socks.
Not order socks. I may go through the socks that I have and see if I need to order. So I'll probably get some new socks and then I'll go in and make out a plan of what socks I'm going to wear every day. And then I'll start posting them sock o'clock. I don't know what time I should do that. What time should be sock o'clock?
Two o'clock every single day.
2 o'clock. Okay. So 2 p.m. every day, starting sometime next week. Yeah. 2 p.m. Every day starting sometime next week will be sock o'clock. You can check out my Twitter.
Sock o'clock.
Yeah.
3,000 retweets.
We don't need listener questions. Trending. We can ask our own listener questions. We can come up with our own shit. What time is sock o'clock? It's 2 p.m. on a Thursday.
It's 2 p.m. Be there, be square.
Yeah, be there, be square. That's right.
Oh, man.
Throw your socks in the air.
Throw them in the air. Trending. Throw
them in the air. Hashtag Tyler is wearing.
Tyler's wearing blue and yellow socks this week.
That's right. Blue and yellow socks to support Ukraine. Blue and hashtag yellow. Hashtag sock clock.
Hashtag.
But with that, we're going to wrap up this train wreck.
Yes. This sock wreck.
This sock. We're gonna end this sock rant. And yeah, so I'm gonna go back to playing some Forbidden West. You're gonna go back to exploring the quote unquote great state of Texas.
Yes, I'm gonna go back to exploring. I actually have a bunch of plans right after here, so
yeah.
I'm about to dip.
I say that I'm gonna go eat dinner and then I'm gonna go play more video games. Forbidden West and Breath of the Wild.
I do need to eat some dinner.
Yeah. I need to go do that. I might make somebody else pay for gas though, order DoorDash.
Ooh, but, or you can just run with your pair of socks out and get some dinner.
Yeah, no, I don't live no close.
Nothing but socks.
Within running distance of any restaurant.
Wear nothing but socks.
Wearing nothing but socks. Food. Just run completely stripped naked. Cocks out at hashtag sock o'clock. Cocks out at sock o'clock.
That's funny.
Oh man, I hope everybody has a great week, and as always, we'll catch you next time. Have a good one.
Peace.
Oh man.